is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang is with me, and we're very pleased to welcome our colleague Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies to take us to Oceania, the vast Indo-Pacific, in particular Bougainville, 200 islands approximately, an archipelago, which right now is at the center of a storm we've already been through in the Solomons. And the storm is the People's Republic of China moving very effectively to penetrate through the first island chain by making friends, cash and carry, making friends in a world that is either ignored or has been abused by colonial powers for 200 years. But here we are in the 21st century, and what is to be done? Cleo, a very good evening to you. Your article in the Sunday Guardian is a conversation with John Koons, an author of a novel, They Call Me Ishmael, but also a man who's extremely informed of Bougainville. What is the risk right now in these islands? Good evening to you, Cleo.
Good evening. So the country of Papua New Guinea, which is often shortened to its initials, PNG, is one of the Pacific Islands, but it's one of the Pacific Islands that tells you how different they all are. PNG is larger in terms of population and territory than New Zealand. These are not small countries at all, and it's highly strategically located. Again, we're back to the geography of World War II. Some very serious battles happened around this place, this location, and PNG consists of multiple locations, and one of them is this autonomous area of Bougainville, which itself consists of a main island and then some other areas. And Bougainville, some may know because it has some very good ports, but also because it has incredibly rich gold and copper mine. And when that gold and copper mine was being exploited, the money was being transferred. This is over kind of two decades ago, transferred to the capital of PNG, not necessarily the people of Bougainville, via Rio Tinto, which was perceived as an Australian company. Now, Australia was the colonial overlords of PNG until 1975. So you had a situation where Australia, the colonial, former colonial overlords, were seemingly in cahoots with the government of the newly independent PNG, and the people of the location of Bougainville were suffering terribly. As a result, there was a civil war, a very costly civil war. A lot of people died. And it finally came to an end with the peace agreement about 20 years ago. This is a very similar dynamic, if you remember, to what happened with Malaita and Solomon Islands, which is right next door. There was a civil war, exacerbated by outside forces, but mostly built off internal issues. And then they found their own solution to it. The problem is in both cases, the Townsville Peace Agreement in the case of Solomon Islands and Malaita, and the Bougainville Peace Agreement in the case of PNG and Bougainville, were never properly enacted. It's been unresolved. And an element to the Bougainville thing was to have to look for independence. And they had an independence referendum a couple years ago, and over 97% of the population of Bougainville voted for independence. But now the Australian defense minister was in PNG not that long ago, and he said what he said made it sound like he was backing PNG, which doesn't want Bougainville to go independent, against an independent Bougainville. So it's reigniting those tensions in the same way. Australia just sent 60 semi-automatic weapons to Sogavari in the Solomon Islands, which also has the potential to contribute to domestic conflict in neighboring Solomon Islands. So looking at what's happening with PNG, Bougainville, and Solomon's Malaita in tandem, and how Australia is managing it, and how China is looking for opportunities in both of those locations is helpful for understanding how dangerous the situation is becoming now.
Gordon?
Cleo, if we step back and look at another archipelago, Indonesia, very close to PNG, we have seen the same dynamic towards independence of islands which have felt abused or, in other ways, alienated from the main grouping. So we have East Timor declaring independence and being recognized as such. I guess the question for you would be, with regard to Papua New Guinea, Is Bougainville's independence inevitable, or is there something there which might keep PNG together?
So Bougainville, I think, is it's either going to go independent or there'll be another civil war. And, you know, so that's the danger. But bringing in Indonesia is very apt and astute, because part of the way that Australia is framing its relationship with the central government in PNG has to do with its relationship with Indonesia. So Australia, it's very important for Australia to maintain what it considers to be a good relationship with Indonesia. And you mentioned East Timor, which is now independent, but there's another area, West Papua, which is striving for at least more autonomy. And in that case, that's a religious thing. So West Papua, most of the people in West Papua are Christians, and most of Indonesia isn't. There are also resources in West Papua. And Australia has really backed, I'd say, the Indonesians on this front as well. So there are a lot of these brewing divisions. And in some cases, if the current president of Bougainville does not want the Chinese to come into his province or what would be his country, but if he's locked out by Australia and he's got a population that is desperate for independence, and he's running out of options, then of course the Chinese will try to take advantage of that. So it's the same with Malaita. The Malaitans, Daniel Suidani, definitely anti-Chinese. He blocked CCP investment there. And in fact, the Huawei towers that are supposed to go into the rest of Solomons are not going to be allowed into Malaita. But if he's also not backed by the West, then the situation gets more and more desperate. And either you end up with a civil war in which Australian weapons are used to suppress and oppress people who are anti-CCP and then put them into an even more desperate situation, you know, or China basically just takes over anyway. Like, it's just insane. To me, the way Australia is handling this by backing central governments that are much more aligned with Australia than the democratic people who have protections under peace agreements that have already been signed is just inexplicable.
Cleo, heretofore, we've had conversations about how the U.S. has deputized New Zealand and Australia, this part of the world. Is that still the case, or is the U.S. now pushing its way in that new embassy in the Solomons? Is that the new style of this State Department?
So that's a good, it's makes a lot of sense that you said State Department as opposed to kind of the U.S. government or DOD or things like that.
We have 1 minute. Go ahead.
Yeah. So yes, I think state, and in fact, Indo-Pacific coordinator in the NSC, Kurt Campbell, repeatedly, and Secretary of State Blinken repeatedly references Australia and New Zealand as leaders in the area. And what the people in the area really want is direct bilateral relationships with the United States in order to give them an alternative to China.
And the alternative to China right now requires a presence. Is the presence available? I know the Solomons, but what about the complications of PNG?
In both cases, what needs to happen is you fight Chinese militarization with Western peace. The Chinese hate it when people are at peace and working together and stability breaks out. And we have the weapons for that. We have the tools for that. We have the peace agreements. That should be the priority in both those locations.
Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy is taking us to a part of the world that for the last 200 years has been an asterisk about the way of the peace in the Indo-Pacific. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.